Welcome to Charlie Foxtrot, the new Stargate Universe podcast. My name's Boom.
I'm Cetra.
And we're here to talk about the show that no one watched 5 years ago.
Yeah, I didn't watch it 5 years ago. I watched it 2 years ago.
Actually, I think it's longer than 5 years. I think it's 6 years at this point.
I believe it ended only 3 years ago, but I'd have to go double check. I remember having feelings about spoilers amount of time being specified for a thing at the end of the show.
Uh-huh.
And it having been that much time in real life and hoping they would make a movie or something within the last 6 months. So
You don't need to be that vague. It's been long enough. You don't have to.
Yeah. So they all go into cryosleep at the end of the show. Spoilers.
This is the first episode. You're like, let me tell you how it ends.
Well, yeah. But they're supposed to take 3 years for the intergalactic jump.
Yeah. And it was like fans' false hope.
It was just me. I don't even think it was fans. It was just me.
No, I told my friend Greg about it, and he's like, nope, that was just fans being hopeful. So I don't think you were the only one. I was like, well, maybe. Maybe Stargate is real, and they're just in cryostasis.
Well, or maybe they would think about it like, oh, you know, there's still people watching the show, still people buying the DVDs. Let's try and bring the cast back. Obviously, you can't get Robert Carlyle anymore, so oh well.
I love Robert Carlyle, but
yeah,
I feel like he's wasted on Once Upon a Time.
His soul belongs to ABC now.
Well, I mean, it's not a bad living.
I hope not. He seems to enjoy it.
I mean, good for him, because the rest of the actors, like David Blue and Jamiel Walker-Smith, have not been faring as well.
Yeah.
Which is just a tragedy. But Ming-Na, well, she was already doing well beforehand, so...
Yeah, Ming-Na continues to do well. Brian Smith was in Sense8.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Brian Smith. Can Brian we talk Smith, about Brian Smith?
Who plays Matthew Scott. And also white police officer from Chicago, number 16, in Sense8.
Will Gorski.
At least Gorski's an interesting name.
That's true, but I do love that there's just no... It's just all normal names.
Yeah, he's just... I mean, the man is a decent actor.
I'd say he's better than decent. He's good.
Yeah, he's a good actor, and he's attractive, and...
Right. It's not his fault he plays all my least favorite characters. Like, do-gooder characters, never my favorite.
I don't know, I have a lot of really positive things to say about Scott when we start actually talking.
Yeah, actually, when I start rewatching it, I have a lot of positive things about Scott. I didn't initially like him. But before we go into the episode, we should talk about why we called this Charlie Foxtrot.
Well, because that is what we find ourselves with from the first moment of this show.
For those who are not in the know, Charlie Foxtrot stands for a CF, which means clusterfuck.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, don't listen to this podcast with children, because Cetra swears like a sailor.
And I obviously just did. So, let's get into it. I think we both had the same thought when the show opens. It's like this distant ship coming off from the distance.
Yeah.
Yes, the distant ship coming from the distance.
Yeah, well, you're seeing space, so you get this very strong, like, yes, this is Stargate, this is sci-fi. And as they're showing you all these actors' names, they're also slowly panning up on this huge ship.
Right. You say that you think it's Stargate. I saw this and I was like, this is the most un-Stargate intro ever done.
You know you are not wrong.
Because it always starts like right in the action, very close up to the face.
Okay.
People joking around and everything like that.
So, okay, so it's very sci-fi and not very Stargate then.
That's true. It's very Battlestar Galactica.
We've discussed before in other places, but maybe not here. I watch Stargate, as Boom said, the way Benjamin Button lives his life, which is that I got into fandom first and then watched Universe and then tried to watch Atlantis. So when I try to go back to start at SG-1,
right,
I just sit there screaming at them like, that's not how the ancients work, you idiots! and it drives other people insane.
No, I think it's hilarious. It's my favorite thing about you.
So I love this. This is what I want a Stargate show to be all the time, and I'm fully aware that it is not.
Right. Well, it's pretty much... Well, the way I see that opening scene is kind of like Torchwood was like, we're not Doctor Who. And yeah. we'll show people we're not Doctor Who by rampant sex. And SGU kind of did that with Scott and James.
Yeah.
But they're also like, we'll use a ship. Fuck the gates.
What I remember hearing very early on when I was reading about the show is that basically the reason it failed is it was marketed all wrong. Because right. instead of saying, hey, people that loved Stargate Atlantis, come watch new Stargate.
Should be, they hey, should people have who said, like Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, they should have said, this. Hey, people that loved Battlestar Galactica, come watch this new show about characters in a terrible situation on a spaceship.
Where there's no hope.
Where there's literally no hope, but no robots this time.
And we promise that a main character won't die, but die. No one will accidentally become the Nakai.
yeah. I mean, except they sort of do. But anyway.
Yeah, I guess. But it's not as bad as the what is it? The Nine? Is it the secret Cylons?
You know more things about BSG than I do.
That's true, because I finished it. But I really love the beginning, though, don't you? Like, it's really tranquil, and then suddenly it's just chaos, 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 chaos.
Well, yeah, it's this very, like, you're seeing the ship, the ship is coming to life on its own, with clearly no one in it.
Right, which is so disturbing,
and then Stargate active, right. And you're like, okay, this is where we are. And there's so much chaos right in the first scene.
And I love the science of the chaos. Like, yeah, they're gating at a run on a ship that's moving. Of course they're being, like, flung.
Yeah, well, and right away, you've got, you know, Scott trying to radio back and saying, you know, slow down the evac.
Right.
Which tells you there's an evacuation. Like, somehow something went really wrong.
Right. And the fact that no one's slowing down tells you that, A, he must be so far away that the signal's taking forever to get through the wormhole.
He, even with an open wormhole, he can't communicate.
And B, people don't give a shit what he's saying. They're running as fast as they can.
And there are people coming through who are clearly not military, who clearly don't know where they are or where they were supposed to be.
You mean Camille? Like, why isn't this Earth?
Yeah, God, I love Rey so much. Like, why didn't I come through to Earth?
Can we just talk about the gate room on the ship? It's not that different from the gate room on Earth. It's in a metal enclosed space.
Yeah, it looks a lot like the gate room on Atlantis.
Right.
But, like, even more Spartan. Like, there is no pretty furniture. There are no pretty crystal windows. There's nothing on Destiny. It is wrought iron.
That's not true. There's pretty furniture because they take Young to a bed that has, like, gold embroidered.
Okay. There is nothing anywhere. Everything is, like, raw metal, empty corridors, and then the beds have these beautiful, like, taffeta and silk quilts and pillowcases.
That's so weird.
Which I'm like, okay, so the ancients really valued sleep?
Don't we all?
I guess maybe they spent a lot of time meditating in bed, too, or something.
Well, I mean, I guess... Because they did plan to have people on it originally, but instead they just sent it out. Oh, that's right. They were going to have people gate out to it when it was far enough, right?
I mean, the idea was that it would be, I think, a place that you would gate to once all the problems and stuff at home were done.
Right. Also, once it was far enough out that it would matter that you could gate to it. Yeah. You don't want to have a whole population on the ship bottlenecking.
Well, exactly, because... As they find out once they're on Destiny, actually sustaining a population for any length of time
on there
and a ship that huge is actually very challenging.
Right.
But if you can send it out and say, okay, in 2,000 years, our children will be able to gate to this ship and discover what's out there beyond our galaxies, beyond anything our technology can reach.
Right. And they're like, oh, never mind, we figured out Ascension, bye!
Yeah, I mean, we figured out Ascension, then we all got killed by a freaking plague.
Right.
It's unclear exactly what Destiny's mission is. Obviously, I have fanon theories, but...
Right. I'm having troubles figuring out my canon from fanfic and my canon from real canon these days. But I'm really looking forward to rewatching and recalibrating, as it were. Because I'm at this point where I think Greer and Rush are friends, and that never happens in the show.
There's definitely some grudging respect established within the first 6 or 8 episodes, but Greer trusts nobody.
And much less once the coup happens.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a real problem.
So the other thing about just to get back to the scene, the other part that I really love about that scene is that Scott's voice, like, breaks like a 13-year-old boy when he's trying to get help.
Yeah, Scott, in the first couple of episodes, really, like, watching him know analytically what a leader should do, know the right things to say and the right time to take actions.
Right.
While having no scope of a truly bigger picture. Is really interesting.
Well, what's interesting to me about him is I put this in my notes later, but we might as well talk it now because you did a nice segue, is I actually feel like Scott was relieved, even though he doesn't trust Rush, he was almost relieved when a leader stepped in because I don't think he wants to be it. So, like, yeah, he'll do the bluster and, like, oh, you'd better not fuck up, Rush. Get us back to Earth. But the truth is he wants to not be responsible for any of it. He likes being the second-hand man.
Yeah. I mean, a wise man who may or may not have been Leonard McCoy once said that the person in charge is the person yelling the loudest in a crisis.
Right.
And Scott is totally willing to be that person.
Right.
Because he understands that control needs to happen.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I think it's episode 2 that opens with Rush stepping up and going, oh, yeah, no, I went back to Earth and talked to O'Neill and he put me in charge.
Do you think that actually happened or not? Because they never confirm or deny it.
There's no evidence that it happened. He definitely went and he definitely talked
to somebody.
My guess is he implied that Young was dead.
Well, I mean, it's a safe guess.
Or was dying. I mean, he's Rush. He can very easily be like, oh, he's incapacitated at this time. Someone needs to take charge. He was.
Right.
I mean, okay, we're going to skip ahead a little bit, but...
Whoops.
Young had a seizure in the second or third, like, on Destiny scene.
Right.
A full-on Grand Mal seizure.
Right.
Which can really negatively affect your brain function, sometimes in the long term.
Is this you excusing Colonel Young's actions?
No, it's me being very concerned that it's never discussed again.
Oh.
Like, we don't know what kind of... We get a little bit of what kind of a person Young was before.
Right.
But, like, his judgment could be impaired. His memory could be impaired.
Right. Maybe he's more aggressive because of...
Yeah, he could be more aggressive. He could still be having neurological problems. Like,
right.
That really concerned me. I have a best friend who's an epileptic, so seizures concern me.
Right. No, I understand.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. I didn't realize it was a full-on seizure.
Yeah, they use it it's a really brief flash of, like, showing that TJ's a medic, showing that, like, she's trained for some things but not up to this point, because she basically looks at him and goes, he's seizing, I can't stop that.
Well, I mean, she could, even if she was a trained, like, doctor, she wouldn't know, you can't stop a seizure.
Oh, yeah, there's not a lot you can do without special drugs to stop seizures.
But let's
go back. Okay, so...
Yeah, so we're back to Eli now, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, a bunch of stuff happens in the gate room. We get shown a lot of characters really quickly, and we're sort of... Yeah, they're definitely in a clusterfuck situation.
Supposedly, the first, like, commentaries, like, people reviewing the show were like, there's too many characters,
And
you're like, how about you use your brain?
I mean, and really, they only introduce about 5 characters in the first episode?
I think they could introduce more Volkner.
Yeah, I mean, well, you get really good Volker by, like, episode 4, I think.
Right.
So then our first flashback is to Eli playing a video game.
With
like
the quote that, like, totally sums up the entire series. That was extremely unsatisfying. When he, like, solves the big math
problem.
Yeah,
like, he solves it and then gets teleported back to the beginning of the level. And his friend's like, oh, yeah, dude, you solved it, I'm sure.
But I, like, the second he said that, I was like, I wonder if that was meant to be an illusion. Because, like, there's no satisfying endings in this show whatsoever. It's just reality.
Well, and it's such... Can I just say, that's such a Rush thing to have done? Like, because to Rush, just solving the problem would have been everything he ever wanted.
That's reward enough.
He would give not a single crap what happened after that.
He's like, what do you mean, MMO people expect, like, the Vorpal Sword?
Yeah, exactly. You know, Eli wanted at least a big explosion.
Right? Well, he probably wanted some armor that said, look, I solved this thing, you can't get it unless you solve it, too. Do they, you know, I was really depressed when I listened to the commentary that they didn't even address that they stole the plot from the last Starfighter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the last Starfighter is about using video games to, like, find people who are adept at, you know, flying starships and then putting them in the military to fight aliens.
Oh, okay.
Like, maybe they didn't do it on purpose, but that's such a famous sci-fi movie. Like, I can't imagine that they were like...
It actually, like, watching it through again, I'm like, this is actually terrifying, right? Like,
right.
You do something online.
Right.
The military shows up at your door.
And you know he's done bad hacking because he automatically thinks that he's getting caught for something else he's done.
Oh yeah, Eli Wallace isn't here.
like, so you know that he's not done good things.
Yeah, you know he's been up to... I mean, everybody's been up to something shifty on the internet, right?
Right, right.
But for them to show up and then not even give him time to call them back, to make any kind of decision, right. Anything, just straight out of his house, up to the Hammond, done.
Right. I remember putting it in my... I don't remember. I'm looking at my notes, and I put, like, are they aware that they are kidnapping Eli? And then I wrote... And then Rush is, like, talking about erasing memories and stuff. I'm like, okay, now they're blackmailing Eli.
My exact note is, Rush is an actual complete asshole here. Like, whoa.
Yeah, but at the same time, this is the nicest he's ever been to Eli. Like, this fucking manboy just solved a problem that he's been working on for months, and he's pretty gracious about it.
Yeah, I think because in that situation, he still feels like he's in control, right? Like, he right. got to go get Eli with O'Neill. He's still the contact point.
Right.
As soon as they're on Icarus, and, you know, Scott is showing Eli around and going, people didn't mind seeing you kick Rush's ass at math. Then Rush gets much more defensive and much more not happy. Because he likes to be in control of his own situations. And being in the military complex clearly does not sit well with him.
Oh, no. He's a very independent civilian. I'm not as smart as Rush, but I imagine if I was in the military industrial complex, I would have just as much trouble fitting in as he does.
Yeah.
I'm looking for my next. Oh yeah, Eli wanted to change his pajamas. And I'm like, no, that is your most endearing quality, is your pajamas. And it's a beautiful metaphor for you, like, having a dream or a nightmare.
Yeah, he wanted to put on pants. you get a bunch of insight into who Eli is and what he, like, what kind of a person he is really quickly.
Right.
Like, first watching his expressions as he watches all of Daniel's apparently infinite now you're in the Stargate program videos.
Where does Daniel Jackson get the time to do all those training videos?
Do you get to time travel when you ascend? Can you record videos while ascended?
Maybe it's just a hologram that people program of himself. Because, isn't he... I believe he's off-planet most of the time. And at this point in the series, isn't he, like, trying to fuck the world with the problems he created with the Ori? I believe that's what's happening.
No, you know who designed that hologram? They designed it for O'Neill. So that they could just, like, project it in the corner of his office. And he could be like, don't do that, Jack. Just stop.
Oh, no. Speaking of O'Neill, I really like O'Neill and Rush's rapport. I think they get along pretty well, honestly.
They do. Like, O'Neill has developed, because of his time with Jackson and Carter, like,
right.
such a respect for scientists.
Yeah.
And he clearly doesn't want to make the same mistakes with Rush that he sort of did with Daniel in the beginning of, like, making him try to be a soldier.
Right.
That he does. They really do have a good rapport, and he...
That's what makes me think that maybe he did put Rush in charge. I think Rush lied about some sort of, well, implied
yeah.
certain circumstances, and I almost wonder O'Neill might have put him in charge.
He absolutely might have.
Yeah.
And he's such a good leader, a good manager, right?
Right.
Like,
he
delegates
that,
to the right
sure.
people.
Right.
And he always has the back of people that are under him.
Unless it's the movie.
Well, okay. Yeah, the early stuff, maybe not so much, but he's grown into a good leader, damn it.
Well, to be fair, he just lost his kid in the movie, and most people don't really consider the movie that canon.
Yeah, he's kind of a mess.
So, the Daniel Jackson training videos. I love how Eli is like, you're boring as hell.
Yeah, well, no, he starts out having this, like, okay. And then he's starting to fade, and then, like, it shows the event horizon settling, and he, like, perks up and looks at it. And then it just slowly gets into, like, okay, I get it.
You can see why he failed MIT.
Well, yeah.
He didn't fail, he dropped out, didn't he?
But it also, it's not made clear.
Yeah.
But, like, at the same time, as somebody that's, like, seen really smart kids try to have information shoved into them that way, like,
right.
That's kind of proof that he is really, really bright.
I wrote that Eli is a life lesson. If you don't apply yourself and you're naturally talented, you'll just get to have your dreams.
But your dreams won't always be what you thought they'd be.
They might just be marooning you on a ship millions of light years away.
They might be a lot scarier and you might not really be prepared for them.
Yeah. Oh, Eli, he's... I'm going to be kind of hard on Eli probably for the next 4 or 5 episodes because to me he's like Wesley Crusher. He's the best Wesley Crusher I've ever seen, but he's still Wesley Crusher for a little bit.
I mean, he does definitely... The other thing that I made a note of specifically that he does is he gets to call his mother and he doesn't tell her anything. Like, he's been told this, and this are top secret. Here's what you can say.
Right.
And he legitimately does that, even to his own mom.
Right.
Which makes him much more straightforward and trustworthy than a lot of the other people we start to see in this show.
That's a good note. It's true. What do you think his mom has? I think she might have lupus.
She has HIV.
Oh, she has... Really? When did they
say that? Yeah, they discuss it. Oh, man. It's got to be mid this season. Because, and basically the problem is that she has HIV, but also depression.
So she has
attempted suicide before.
Right.
And he's basically like her lifeline where he's the one that can push her and say, no, I need you to take care of yourself. No.
Right.
You know.
Oh man, I don't remember that. That sucks.
Yeah. There's some real rough stuff, concerning Eli's mom later.
Why don't I remember that? Maybe it's in second season, which I haven't watched
yet. It's possible that it's in season 2.
Okay.
It's been so long since I did a full run through of the show that
I just don't want it to end.
Yeah.
Next is Chloe, right?
Yeah, so he beats Chloe. She clearly knows a lot more about him than he does about her.
Right.
She's so professional and put together. She, you know, introduces herself as an aide to this senator. She doesn't say that he's, I guess, congressman. Sorry.
Right.
She doesn't say that he's her father. Like, she's been to Harvard. She's, you know, she's just a really cool kid. And Eli's obviously smitten.
Well, why wouldn't you be?
I know. She's great. Everybody loves Chloe.
Yeah, she actually makes me mad how professional she is. I'm like, screw you. I have so much trouble looking that put together.
Oh, wait for late episode 2. She will lose her shit.
Oh, well, no, I know. And then she'll go into yoga pants. She's probably like, finally.
Yeah, no, she spends a lot of time in that dress. That, you know, first professional with her pink pea coat. And...
Right. Which is interesting. Her, Eli and her are the only two people in the series that are allowed color whatsoever. If you look at all of them, there's Chloe with her lavender, and then there's Eli with his red shirt, but everyone else wears, like, browns and grays and blacks and
white.
That's
true. Even Rush, who is not in military
clothes. He's got that sort of dark olive.
Yeah, and even Ray, who does have, like, layers of clothes and manages to change up her style a little bit, she's still very neutral.
Dark. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? It almost makes them look like they don't fit in whatsoever, but they kind of don't, right? Like, they're the two people that were, like, just magically there on the day that shit went to...
Yeah,
Charlie Foxtrot happened.
Yeah, they're also, the youngest, and they're definitely the most kind of open-minded and able to, you know, learn whatever skills are needed in this new horrible mess that they're in.
I think they're both a little too open-minded because those two change sides so much.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
She's like, I hate you, Rush. No, I love you, Rush.
Yeah.
And Eli's the same way. He's like, oh, I'm on Young's side. Oh, wait, no, I should be on Rush's side. Oh, never mind. Now I'm back on Young's side.
Which, to be fair, like, they both kind of make choices that would make me be like, nope, sorry, dude.
Sorry. I'm going the other way now.
So, end of the Eli flashback, we go back to Destiny a little bit, and you get this beautiful shot of Matt and his team finding Rush standing in the observation room.
Yes.
Watching, and that's when they realize they're on a ship.
I'm on a ship, motherfucker. Yeah.
And just, I don't know, I had this moment of like, yeah. And it's so evident that Rush is where he wants to be.
Right.
Where everybody else is like, what are we doing here? Why are we here? What are we doing?
Maybe that's why every... No, we'll get into Rush's many, many faults soon enough. Because he did not handle himself that well.
He... Yeah, I mean...
I mean, if in the dictionary of not acting skeevy, Rush pretty much ignored all of those.
Yeah, I forget if it's here or in the next episode where I'm like, oh, look, it's Rush's first disappearing act. There will be so many more.
He's not even subtle about it.
Yeah. Like, no, he just, like, glance around, pick something up, walk away.
Yeah, but then again, that he's always just leaving people in the middle of conversations. It's not that unusual for him.
Well, and they spend, cinematography-wise, Rush gets more shots where he's alone in frame in these first couple of episodes than anybody else. He is isolated from conversations, from people, visually. Yeah, it's very...
Do you think that's intentional on his part, or because everyone... They don't trust him already because they knew that this is where he wanted to go in the first place.
And he doesn't do a real good job of faking it.
Right.
Right? Like, if he had stayed in the gate room and been like, oh god, you know, frantically punch some buttons, we can't dial back to Earth.
That, like, is actually my favorite thing about Rush, is everyone's, like, panicking and he's like, all right, time to do science, and just, like, walks away.
Yeah, no, Rush is just ruthlessly efficient.
Oh, I love it.
Which we'll see a lot more of once we get more flashback.
This is a very Rush-friendly podcast, we should warn people. We're also Young-friendly, but...
I will discuss later how hard Young tries to be nice and what a spiky bitch Rush is.
Right?
So...
Well, I mean, what do we always say is that Rush and Young both are making the correct decisions. It's just that you and I tend to fall along with Rush's thinking better than we can follow with Young's thinking. Yeah. Is usually what it is.
Well, in rewatching this, I'm kind of... I've got a lot of notes later of, like...
You Rush, bastard.
Rush has... He is 100% big picture. Like, so big of a picture that humans are tiny, tiny, valuable ants in Rush's picture. And Young is so much more motivated situation to situation.
Right.
He's got more leadership than, say, Scott, you know, in terms of a bigger picture and crew morale and that kind of thing.
Right.
But definitely, you know, they're on different scales from one another. And well, that makes it very hard to understand each other.
Well, right. I also think Young is misguided in his need to instill military discipline on a largely civilian population. Like... That coup that happens 9 episodes later is kind of... That was going to happen.
And he admits it.
After he leaves Rush for dead.
As soon as it's all done and settled, he does apologize.
Right. Well, I mean, that's how you like Young, is because you realize that he owns up to his mistakes.
Yeah. We are wandering so far off the topic of this episode right now.
That's okay. That's okay.
So we go back, we have a flashback of Young fighting with his wife, Emily.
And then he collapses, but we don't ever find out why he collapses, do we?
He collapses because that's the dream he's having, but he's beginning to seize in real life. So that's the transition. And the transition that's most important there is the fade from Emily asking him, Everett, are you all right? To TJ asking him, Colonel, are you all right?
TJ is too hot for Young. I'm sorry.
TJ is so hot.
She doesn't deserve Young.
And brilliant and ruthlessly competent. And right. I adore her.
And hair always impeccable.
She's great. And I don't usually like blondes, so TJ is winning just by me liking her at all. So that's where Young has a seizure. It's very, very short. And then we get back to...
James and Scott fucking in the
James and Scott. And so my note was, I remembered this being Greer with James for some reason. Which, I'm like, I don't know why. That makes no sense. They have
Greer's in a cell.
Because, I knew that Greer was locked up. I don't know why. Because they used the same room with no supplies in it for Greer's cell, maybe.
Right.
Who knows? So Scott, clearly not the most responsible young officer we ever had.
Right, so it's interesting that suddenly he tries to be that responsible person on the ship.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, for him, it's a difference of, active duty crisis situation versus, for the military guys, they've been on Icarus doing kind of nothing.
Right.
Maybe watching the science team try to dial out once every couple of months.
You're real sick of your shit, Rush.
it's definitely not been a ton of fun for them.
Right.
Obviously, Greer got into some kind of trouble.
They never get into that.
What we know is that the charges were brought against him by Ray. So it must have been a civilian issue.
Right.
And my guess is, it's his attitude. Greer doesn't take anybody's shit, and
with
nothing else on her hands, I'm sure that trying to be evaluated by Ray or whatever he was doing, they just rubbed each other the wrong way.
I'm sure it's not even, it wouldn't, even if it wasn't Ray, he would still be mad at whoever
did did it.
That's okay, he gets to stab her in the chest later. I mean, that's not okay with me, but...
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
We do get to see, so it's at that time that Eli and the senator and Chloe all arrive at Icarus Base, and we get to see Young actually being a commanding officer of a base with some political skills and some charm.
Yeah, it doesn't last long. I'm so impressed with Young in the beginning.
and you have this kind of Telford in the background where it's not clear what his position is.
Right.
We find out later that basically, he's going to be the one going through the Stargate, not Young.
Right.
Because Young declined the command of the actual exploratory mission.
Right.
But also, Telford being there while they nearly succeed in dialing the gate is the whole reason for the attack.
But it's a poorly timed attack. So the more I think about, Telford is part of Lucian Alliance, right?
Yeah.
They actually made it almost impossible for themselves to use the gate with all the chevrons that Rush unlocked because they exploded the planet.
Well, so here's my guess based on stuff I know later. They had another similar planet ready to go already.
Oh.
So their hope, before they realized that the base was shielded against beaming in and out, was to grab probably Telford and Rush and maybe a couple other scientists.
Half an Eli.
half an Eli. at that point and disappear them. And then everything's blown up anyway, so everyone's assumed killed in action.
Right.
And no one's looking for them.
That was a very poorly executed attack plan.
Not saying that Keeva's a great commander.
I just, they didn't even wait for... Oh, I guess they couldn't wait, because the second Rush actually succeeded, it was going to be too late for them. So they had to do it before he was going to succeed.
Yeah, exactly.
And it looks like they put their full weight on SGC, because they knew SGC wasn't expecting it, number one.
Yeah.
They knew that they had to defeat everybody. So I'm betting that they pretty much depopulated all of their military stuff and went
in. I mean, and I assume that the explosion of the planet actually hit them pretty hard.
Yeah. There's no way any of those ships survived, in my opinion.
Yeah, or in Sam Carter's opinion, and I trust hers, so.
Oh, that's right, she said that. How did the Hammond get away then?
They gave Telford and the people that were out on fighters, that's why Telford was out there to go through the gate, is he was actually out
fighting,
actively
fighting.
They gave him you have 8 minutes to get back to the Hammond, and then we go to hyperspace.
Right. So he didn't have a choice.
Yeah. So he couldn't get back down to the planet, and they couldn't beam people out either, because the base was shielded.
God damn Telford.
So... Yep. I have a little heart by Riley because he's the one who encodes and announces the chevrons.
That's what I was like, ooh, that must be something important because Riley is important at the end of the season, so it's kind of cool that he's the one encoding. But can I go back just one little thing?
Oh, absolutely.
Eli is taking pictures on his phone of the military installation, including the guns, and one's like, don't do that.
Well, here's...
like, blatantly in front of Colonel Young.
As if they don't have the power to just, like, wipe his phone.
That's true, but still, like, have a little bit of, like, common sense, dude.
He's also, okay, let's be real. This is the SGC. He signed a non-disclosure agreement. They're just going to trust him, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, oh, here, sign this piece of paper. Now let us show you all the things.
I think we're safe now.
What, John Shepard? You're an Air Force pilot with a bunch of, like, super negative stuff on your record? Yeah, just take me to this secret base and then wander around a little. Don't touch anything, okay?
Become the leader. He wasn't technically the leader at first. It was Colonel...
Yeah, it was
There's
the other
so many
dude.
Fucking colonels in Stargate.
Well, colonels are generally going to be the ones assigned special details like that.
Yeah, but here's the thing, is that my friend, who is a, he's a vet, he always complains, like, on Star Trek and Stargate, he's like, there should not be this many commissioned officers in one room. That really fucks up, it fucks the hierarchy up a lot when you have equal ranks.
Yeah.
Because you don't know who to freaking follow.
Well, and we actually see a lot of that later, because Telford is the same rank as Young.
Right.
Young only outranks him because he was given command of this situation.
Right.
So it's definitely a real problem.
Yeah.
And they only have, I mean, they have a colonel and two lieutenants is basically their whole complement of officers.
Right, no, that's believable to me. The rest of Stargate, on the other hand, I'm like, why are there three colonels on this team?
Well, because the team refuses to be torn apart. Ohana means family.
And family... And Ohana means you never get left on the other side of the gate.
Yep. Even as we all get promoted way beyond our initial stations.
Oh, well.
So my last thing in that flashback is watching them try to dial and Rush's, you know, curiosity and determination being there saying, you know, no, give it a second, no, it's going to work, and Young going, no, shut it down.
Yeah, that's so telling. I totally wrote about that.
Like, you are given, okay, here is a snapshot of everything about their relationship.
He's like a puppy dog when Young shuts it down, though. He's like, he looked like you kicked him.
And then he bites back, just like a puppy dog. He goes, Eli, we need to rework your equations. It's like, oh, sure, when they don't work, they're my equations.
I like how Eli's like, don't put it on me.
Yeah.
But part of me is like, Rush didn't necessarily. I just think it's an example of how immature Eli is. Like, he's not ready for this situation. Because Rush, they are Eli's equations. And Rush takes culpability because he's the one that helps engender them to be, if you will. And he's the one that inputted them. So I don't really feel like he's putting it on Eli. Just thinking, like, yeah, he did a little bit of, like, let's just fix your equations. But
yeah,
I don't think it's as blamey as Eli thinks it is. I think Eli's being immature.
Well, in the very next flashback, we get Young interrupting Rush and Eli at work and... Rush going, no, we need to keep working on this. And Eli going, no, I'm hungry, please, thank you.
wait, we have to talk about one thing before we switch to that.
Yes.
I think it's, Rush is way more political than I remembered on Icarus. Which, by the way, who names that base Icarus?
He absolutely is, and also, good question.
Yeah, he was laughing at Senator Armstrong's stupid joke about, like, the $1.6 billion being spent.
Yeah. Like, he tries to play nice up to a point.
Right. Well, you can tell he's just like, shut the fuck up, Senator Armstrong.
Yeah. Oh, he does not care in the slightest what the senator thinks, but he's willing to play nice to keep science going, right?
Do you know it's really hard to look at Armstrong, by the way? Because he was Shooter McGavern, the bad guy in Happy Gilmore.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
Oh, it's hilarious. But my problem with him is, like, as I rewatch this, I realize he's actually a good guy the whole way through. But because all I do is see Shooter McGavin, I was like, man, the senator's a dick. And that's probably what Rush sees when he looks at him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a really great face for, like, bureaucracy.
He looks a little like Donald Trump. sorry, McDonald.
Yeah, sorry, he's a little bit bigger. Is I don't know. Anyway.
I think his name is Christopher McDonald, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, it could be. And he looks so like, yeah, if Trump ever has a biopic.
Yeah, there you go.
My vote is for Christopher McDonald.
Just gotta comb his hair way over.
So, do you think Young was wrong to shut that down, by the way?
I don't. Because
I think
we know.
He could have waited a little bit.
He could have waited, but we know it wouldn't have worked.
Oh.
Because they had the wrong origin point.
Right.
And they would have risked what happened to the planet anyway.
Right.
Happening much earlier. Either destabilizing it or blowing it up.
Right.
So I think in that end, like, Young did make the right call.
Right.
But I can see why Rush was pissed.
Right. I think, to me, without the benefit of hindsight, like, I felt that there wasn't anything indicating that there was danger levels.
There was.
Oh, was there?
Yeah, they were talking about circuits failing and power levels being critical.
Damn it.
Yeah.
You win.
Sorry.
All right, let's skip to, I think next is Rush and Eli at the whiteboard.
We get a little bit of a flashback to...
Oh, power back on, right?
Destiny. Yeah, the power is back up, and you start to really get an idea of how awkward it is for Scott to try and be in command of these people, most of whom aren't used to taking commands of any kind.
Right. No, I wrote, Scott is not great here.
Yeah.
But to be fair, like, the senator shouldn't have been pushing as much as he was. Like, no one knows what's happening. But of course the senator was. Like, he's used to being in charge.
Yeah, you know, and that's his job, and he's looking at this young kid. And right. At that point...
Who was just fucking in the closet.
Yeah. I think it's actually the confrontation you're thinking of is a little bit earlier, because it's before they go find Rush.
Oh, sorry.
And then we go back to Icarus, and we start really seeing where Young and Rush's priorities do not line up.
Well, see, I was gonna focus on Eli and Rush's example of old versus new ways of learning.
For sure.
And I'm like, that's gonna be problems too. But yes, Young and Rush, they are...
Yeah. Well, in Rush, there's this really long, protracted scene of him, like, just Rush looking at the math.
Yeah.
And, like, the struggle with it on his face is palpable.
It's almost the same struggle you see when he's getting his dinner and he just looks at everyone drinking wine.
Yeah.
I was like, you look like the saddest puppy ever.
Yeah. Rush definitely, he's here for really specific reasons.
Right.
And yet, he doesn't end up taking dinner. Like, he shows up.
Right.
He looks at this, you know, officer's table where they're standing up and making toasts. He walks away from them, handing him... They've already prepared him a meal
right,
to go because
right.
they know he won't eat.
Right.
And he goes back, not to work, but to look at a photo of Gloria and cry.
Well, because, I mean, the payoff on that... Like, good job for them. The payoff on that photo takes a lot of episodes. But,
yeah.
Like, it makes sense, though, right? To him, because Gloria died while he was working on this project. So if he doesn't succeed at it, it's almost like...
Yeah.
He
then
fucked
what was
her
he
over.
Doing?
Yeah. Like, he missed his wife's death because he was so focused on this project that's failing. And you can't share that with anybody because Rush doesn't know how to express feelings.
I will put out there that I'm not 100% sure that's all canon.
No, it is, because in the he talks about it with the Daniel Jackson AI in Human. And
there is no Daniel Jackson AI.
I know, I call him the Daniel Jackson AI. The Daniel Jackson specter that is Rush's mind that tells him.
Oh, okay, that is what I think of as the AI. I don't know if it is officially an AI, but...
Well, I mean, it's technically Destiny, so I call it the AI.
I clearly will have to watch Human again.
Because it's not...
I remember...
Like, Rush says it's, like, him talking to himself, but I honestly believe that there's something about... Destiny that is intrinsically involved in that Daniel that's helping him think past what he's already thinking. Because
well,
he couldn't
yeah.
do it on his own. He needed
yeah,
some
because,
sort of push.
Because it seems to know what went on in the neural interface.
Right.
Interfacing with him through the chair.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking
but
of
anyways,
getting way
yeah,
ahead
we should
of ourselves.
Not do Human right now. So then the senator embarrasses his daughter. Rush pulls out a photograph. Then the base is suddenly under attack. And I'm like, of course it is. You called it Icarus.
Yeah.
I wonder if Telford named it that. He's like, they'll never know I was a traitor.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, there could be other reasons, right? It could be that the planet is real close to the sun. Who knows?
It could be that it's real close to exploding. Oh, maybe that's it. Because they do talk about how the energy on that planet is, like, anything could compromise it.
Yeah. I mean, they're literally tapping a very specific type of power out of the planet's core. And even doing that destabilizes the planet more.
Right.
So, yeah. I just have this big capital letters, Sam!
They always have to bring back all the SGC people, SG-1 people, for every new Stargate.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like that or not, but I'm okay with it, I guess.
I enjoy it in the level that they had it here.
Right.
Where they're, you know, being used a little bit to anchor you into the universe, to tell you who you can trust.
Right.
Because obviously, anyone that Colonel O'Neill or Samantha Carter trust is a good person.
They kind of feel out of place a little bit to me, though, because they come from a more comic series.
Yeah, they're definitely in a little bit of a different show.
Right. It's like when I look, it's kind of like how you look at Chloe and Eli and their colors and everybody else is really muted. That's kind of how I feel about, like, Carter. Not Carter so much, because I feel she seamlessly fits into most universes, but O'Neill definitely. It's like he's just this, it's almost like he's cut-pasted in, and it's not that I don't like him in the series. I think he's very good. I really like his rapport with Rush, but it doesn't feel authentic to the way the show is being written. It's like trying to bridge the two series.
Yeah, well, and that's, again, like, did this need to be a Stargate show?
Probably
not. Or could
not.
It have been, you know, any other show?
Right.
But Stargate it is, so.
Well, I mean, I don't know. The Stargate mechanics are pretty important to the show. I don't know how it would be without the Stargate mechanics. I don't know how they would get the same conceit.
I guess that's true. The, like, and then we can reach these places but not other places. And
yeah, like, it had to be Stargate. It's just that it's a very different kind of Stargate. Like, these are people who aren't Pollyanna about things, right? They don't, like, miraculously save the day in the last 3 seconds, unless they're Eli/Wesley Crusher.
Yeah, I think it's in Air Part 3 that Young is talking to O'Neill, and he's like, we don't, you know, we have people that aren't trained for this, and O'Neill's like, yeah, none of us were trained for this. He's like, we don't have any food, go find some food. I'm like, it's not that easy, Jack. Like,
I was just gonna be like, shut up, MacGyver.
The man is telling you things are rough, and you're like, it could be worse.
I hate that. Oh, it's, my dad does that to me sometimes, and you're just like, you know, sometimes we just want people to listen.
Let's see, we skipped a little bit of a scene on Destiny where Rush says he's gonna put the power and the life support back on, and Greer tries to shoot him.
Oh, right. No, that's a great scene.
And it's a very, like, I think it's the first time we really, really start to figure, like, who Greer is.
Yeah.
And it's the very next flashback that we find out, oh, he was locked up.
Right.
We don't know why, but Young just says, consider the charges dropped, get out there and help.
Greer has anger issues, which are definitely explored later. That's what we discover. We also discover that he has a healthy, healthy, healthy respect for the hierarchy. So you know he wasn't put away for disrespecting a superior or anything like that.
Yeah, he definitely is. He is in the military complex, and that is where he wants to live.
My favorite part is that Rush pushes the button and nothing happens.
Yep.
Well, that was extremely unsatisfying.
Yeah, yeah. Rush's life.
Next is a flashback to Johansson, or TJ. She wants to leave and get that scholarship.
And Ray is clearly confused about why she's leaving, but with the hindsight, it's clear that this is leading into, like, Young. Her relationship with Young. And
do you think it's because Young wanted to go back to his wife?
Well, Young also doesn't know that she's pregnant, and she does.
She doesn't know she's pregnant till later.
She did at that point.
Really? Because I remember it seemed... No, you're right, she did.
Yeah,
right.
She discusses it with Chloe later.
Yeah.
But that's basically why she decided to leave.
Well, yeah, like, he's with his wife, and the only flashbacks we have with Young is that he's trying to make it work with his wife, which feels so unfair to TJ, number one. And number two, he doesn't even know where her scholarship was. That made me lose a lot of respect for Young.
Well, here's the thing. At least my interpretation of it through the first couple of episodes here, he got in trouble with his wife or whatever. Like, their separation started because she found out he had cheated.
Right.
And he was trying to do the, like, it happened once, it's never going to happen again situation. Right. Or it happened however many times it happened.
Enough of the baby.
And it seems like TJ was okay with that.
Right.
Not necessarily happy.
Until she was stuck with him on the ship.
But, yeah, exactly. And that's why she was leaving. And
because she was stuck on the base with him, too, wasn't she?
She was, but she should have. They mention it later. She was meant to have shipped out.
Right.
Like, weeks before. She was off active duty.
And then and Young wasn't supposed to be on the ship at all, either, because obviously he was trying to make it work with his wife, who didn't like him going around.
Yeah, so once they had dialed, you know, where they were going and tested it and everything, it was supposed to be Telford that went through with, you know, Scott, and probably not most of these scientists, probably some of them.
You know, I have respect for Young in some ways, but his personal life, anytime we have flashbacks to it, I'm just...
It's a mess.
I mean, this is much later, but, like, don't fucking punch a guy for cheating, for, like, you know, helping your wife cheat when you already cheated on her, you double standard little motherfucker.
Yeah, everybody can punch Telford as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, that's true. I rescind that statement.
The end of that flashback, it starts with TJ talking to Ray, but it goes back into some of the attack stuff.
Right.
And Young telling TJ to let this soldier go, who's obviously dying.
That's so telling about TJ, though. Like, she can't let someone die, even though it's going to happen no matter what.
He is in really bad shape, and it is a crisis, and she would rather stay there and try to save one person than save herself, you know.
Right.
Yeah, she's a good medic.
I kind of feel bad for Rush in these scenes, though, because it's too risky to dial Earth. But because of his ulterior motives, his good intentions don't count.
Yeah, well, and we basically saw Young come flying through because of the explosion, right?
Right.
Like, if the explosion had been going to translate through the wormhole, being in a tiny enclosed gate room, way, way more dangerous than being wherever they would have been on Earth with a huge amount of crew and support.
Yeah, what I think he was worried is that the planet would explode while the gate was still open.
It did.
No, it didn't.
Oh, it didn't? Okay.
No, it closed right behind
Young. I mean, because Young comes flying through that gate.
Yeah, that's because he set the explosives.
Okay.
So that explosion was Young's
explosion. Oh, was not the actual planet exploding.
No, the planet exploded, like, 30 seconds after the gate shut.
Okay.
And I think that would... It would at least take out Cheyenne Mountain.
That's true. That would be sad.
So I think that because Rush didn't know when the planet was going to explode, he felt it was better to, like, because he's logical and rational like this. Like, I'm such a Rush trash person, but I really do believe that he thought about it logically, and it was cool that it kind of fit with what he wanted to do anyways. Yeah. But, like, he didn't know when the gate was going to be able to close or when the planet was going to explode. So it was better to might as well take this one chance that they'll never, ever get back again and do it. And if they all survive, awesome. And if they don't, they saved Earth. Like, I think that's what he was thinking in his head.
Yeah. And the problem with Rush is that he does all of that calculation so quickly.
Right.
And decides on the right course of action and pushes through with it. And doesn't want to explain himself to anybody.
It looks like he's been thinking about it the whole time.
Well, yeah. And it makes it look very suspicious to people who are only starting to figure out the process that he went through.
Right. Yeah. Which is why I think Eli and Rush are great. Because Eli can usually... He's only a couple of steps behind Rush most of the time.
Yeah. For sure.
But I do like... I love Eli's, well, it can't be worse than here.
That's true. Here is going to explode. There might not explode.
Right? Like, I like Eli's logical thinking, too. Also makes a lot of sense.
And then our last scene on Destiny is them figuring out where they're at, getting access to some of the systems, seeing how far they are from home. And
I love Eli's like, nope, those are galaxies. Yeah.
And I said, Rush is super annoyed that Eli is actually good at things.
He's glad for it at the same time.
You know, he doesn't like that Eli can read ancient. Right. Because he likes that being his special skill. He doesn't like that Eli can sort of tell what he's doing because he likes his work being completely obscure to everyone.
Right. Well, to be fair, Eli doesn't totally speak ancient yet. Like, he knows what the video game
told him.
That's
true. That's true.
So that's why I think Rush gets so pissy, because he's like, fuck off. You can't read the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong.
But, and at the same, like, even if he could, though, like, I'm glad that I don't know. I have mixed feelings about Eli. Like, I love him. He's one of my favorite characters. But sometimes, like, his tattletale instinct is really frustrating for me.
Yeah, I mean, Eli really is this, like...
He just has to show off sometimes, I think.
Yeah, well, and he's this, like, neutral good, leaning toward lawful good character.
Right.
And that definitely conflicts with some things, most specifically Rush.
What would you say Rush is? Chaotic, neutral?
Yeah. Yeah, I would put that out there.
I would say chaotic good, maybe, because I really do think he has the best.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, we're going to go into really nerdy D&D stuff for a second.
I'm totally unprepared.
To be defined as good, you have to be good within the standards of society as a whole.
Oh, never mind. He's chaotic neutral.
Yeah, and Rush ignores too much of the social niceties and is too willing to sacrifice when it's the right thing to do to really count as good.
Ugh, Rush. In the standard sense. I can't wait till we talk about that scene in next episode, but you're like, Rush, you're right, but you were so callous about this. It's like, they don't want you logically talking about it. They want you to show some fucking emotions. Are you stupid?
Yeah.
Alrighty. So anyways, Scott is very upset about where they are. I actually think Rush is kind of upset too. Like, I think he really wants to be on Destiny, but I didn't think that he thought he was going to get stuck on it.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't really want to be stuck. He didn't want to be sent. I think, in all honesty, he would have been happier to be there alone for weeks.
Yeah. Well, the life support would have lasted longer.
Probably, if we're imagining what this mission would have gone like in a normal Stargate series, he would have been on that first away team, and the first time they came back, he would have said, no, just leave me here. I'll see you in 2 days when you dial back.
Right. No, I agree.
And he would have had time to commune with the ship and figure out, you know, what his life meaning was, and instead he's stuck dealing with these civilians and these military kids breathing down his back, and
he's got no social niceties, young, had a possibly personality-altering seizure while he and Rush don't get along in the first place, but they're the two most powerful people on the ship. Yeah, it's just a big Charlie Foxtrot.
And if Rush had spent any time playing nice with anyone who was going to be his commanding officer, it wasn't Young. It was Telford.
Yeah, no, it's true.
And so whatever agreements he and Telford had about, you know, authority are out the window because he's stuck with Young.
Yeah. And that doesn't work so well for them.
Yeah, so the final flashback leads up to the actual evacuation, which we saw in the beginning, and just watching people go into the gate, there is nobody pausing for a three count.
Right.
There are people coming through two and three at a time, carrying, you know, not stuff not strapped to them, just carrying random boxes.
They're terrified as shit, though.
Oh, yeah. No,
so Young's explosion, more of that explosion should have gone through the wormhole.
It threw him. Okay, most of them were going, like, 4 or 5 feet from the gate.
Right.
It flung him 20 feet from the gate.
That's true.
So,
but I'm saying the actual incendiary actual elements of the explosion should have joined, unless it really seriously cut just as he went through.
Well, so it we know that when he went through, the gate shut down.
Right.
So that protected them somewhat, and then immediately all the lights were down in the gate room. So people could have fallen back down, people could have been further injured.
Right.
It's not super clear. We know that a lot of people got real banged up in that evacuation.
No, I mean, Eli almost got, like, a case to the head. That could have killed him.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, Eli, no! I mean, I know I don't like you for 4 episodes, but I love you afterwards.
And then we have our last little bit of Samantha Carter reporting from the Hammond and saying that 81 people are missing in action.
That is so haunting.
And didn't come through to Earth, and where did they go?
So on the Blu-ray, which I've stolen from you, it just goes right into the next episode. So it doesn't have that haunting quality of, like, I don't know where these people went. Oh, my God, 81 people might be dead, that kind of thing. Like, that's haunting. It goes straight to...
Yeah, like, it definitely, like, it stops, and it goes to black, and it goes to the credits.
See, that's so cool. In the DVD, they put part one and part two in the same thing, because I'm pretty sure they aired on the same night.
Oh, I'm sure. Sci-fi. Yeah. Because part two doesn't open with any kind of recap.
Right.
In the way that later episodes do, so.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, do you have any final thoughts for the episode?
I really like this show.
My thoughts are just, like, I don't think there's ever going to be a perfect pilot for this show. I think, because you know you have to tie into the old Stargate universe, you have to introduce a lot of new characters, but I think it does a good enough job.
Yeah.
Like, I think it does as good as it can do.
I definitely feel that. And I know you said some people complained that, there were too many characters introduced, but I honestly believe they picked kind of the dead minimum that they could.
Right.
They gave you Rush, they gave you Young, they gave you Eli and Chloe,
a little bit of Camille and Greer.
Yeah, a little bit of Greer, but you get more Greer in episode two. Right. You get more, you know, they slowly build the cast up.
Right.
And but it I does feel like get they big.
Give us less James.
Yeah, there's not a lot of James. I mean, then there's... I like that the other characters are around already. Because some shows, you know, they introduce you to the first three people, and then suddenly, 2 episodes later, it's like, oh, and here's our best friend that's been here the whole time.
Right? Oh, you mean Stargate? Sorry, you mean Star Trek?
Yeah, maybe a little. And so being able to see that everyone's there, like, we get very little information about TJ or Rey, but they're there.
Well, what's important to me is that they show a lot, not Volker, not Brody, the one that gets in the chair.
Franklin.
Basically, Franklin. Yeah, Franklin is, like, the one, oh my god, that's fucked up. Because in the next episode, Franklin's the one that tries to save Senator Armstrong, and then has to watch him die.
Yeah.
No Franklin wonder he's suicidal.
Franklin is the one that's there fiddling with the door control.
Well, since we're already talking about episode two, I think we should end this one here.
Okay, yeah.
Unless you have other final thoughts?
I don't think so.
All right.
I'm ready. So this has been Charlie Foxtrot.
You can find us at sgupodcast.tumblr.com if you want to ask us any questions.
And do that, because I really, really like talking about this show.
All right, bye.
Bye.